Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
So what's the message? Why do the free birds sing? And what's the best way to listen and learn the language of the birds? That's all coming up when our conversation continues with bird song expert Dr. Donald Kruidsma as your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wildside News. What better way to spend some time in the wild than learning to read the story of the songbirds? We continue our discussion about the wondrous ways of our winged friends.
Oh, the concept of this globe constantly spinning. There's always a point at which the first light is sweeping around the globe. And how do I begin my book? Always somewhere the sun is rising, and always somewhere the birds are singing. That's a real pick-me-up if I ever need one.
A spiral of wonder around the world, continuously forever.
It is. Mm-hmm. Beginning 150 million years ago with that first bird.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people who possibly have never experienced that. I know a lot of people who haven't. They're not aware of the fact that if you get up truly before sunrise and head out into a forest or almost anywhere, but, wherever there's a lot of diversity of birds, you're going to experience something that you will not experience any other time. And that, as you say, it's an opera of joy that is quite extraordinary. Are you able to go on at that time and discern specific bird calls? I suppose at this point you can.
Yes, I would recommend for anyone wandering out there at that time of the day to go with a guide, go with someone who knows these different species and can point out all the kinds of things that are going on. My book is a start because I take various species and explain what they do at dawn, like chipping sparrows, and in the east we have our eastern wood peewee, but there's nothing like being outside with someone who can say, listen to what that bird over there is doing, and there may be 10 or 15, 20 different species within earshot, and they're all different, as you say earlier. Each one of these species is different. If we find closer related birds, sometimes we can say, well, look, they're doing something similar here, like your western wood peewee and our eastern wood peewee. There's a lot going on that they're doing in a similar way, but, all these different lineages of songbirds, 4,500, each of them doing largely something that they have come up with on their own.
Now, in a bit, we're actually going to give some advice on how you can go out and particularly utilizing the principles that Donald has talked about and made so clear in this book about how this can help you to go out and really start to appreciate the things that Donald is talking about. But let's talk a little bit more about this morning bird call, because that is unique. Has anyone been able to, there's many ideas as to why they would be doing that, but what are some of the common concepts as to why this morning bird call is so universal?
One of the problems of one reason we don't know so much about what birds are doing during the dawn chorus is that even scientists have trouble getting up at that time of day to study it. So the ideas that we have are, it's too dark to find food at that time of the day, so why not sing? But then you could say, well, why not sing at midnight, so that doesn't really stand up. Others would say, well, it's calm at that time of day. It's a good time to sing. Yeah, that's true. My gut feeling, and I think it is of many people who study these birds, is that a lot of energy is put into this dawn chorus because this is when a lot of the social relationships among the birds are being established. Males competing with each other in some kind of a dominance hierarchy. And females undoubtedly listening to what the males are doing, making decisions about who will be the father of their offspring. Because each female, even though she might be paired with another male in what we would call a socially monogamous relationship, each female in so many species that's now been discovered is making decisions beyond with whom to pair, that maybe only half the young in her nest might be fathered by her social partner, and the other half might be fathered by other males in the neighborhood. And so this leads, you think, to this frenzy of singing, where it's a competition for the heart of the female.
That's a theory. Actually, it's a fact. I'd never known. I thought perhaps the females were a little more monogamous than that. And, of course, it depends on the species, I'm sure, but I didn't know that.
It does certainly depend on the species, but the more that are looked at here, especially in the north temperate zone, we could go to the tropics and come up with some different patterns, but it's extraordinary. This was discovered some years ago, at least in my mind. I think of a study on red-winged blackbirds. Someone got the bright idea of vasectomizing the male red-winged blackbirds, which, of course, renders them sterile. But, lo and behold, the females in those territories of those males were still having fertile eggs. And all the DNA fingerprinting that one can now do reveals that when you look at four babies in, for example, a chestnut-sided warbler nest, there's a good chance that two of those babies are going to be fathered not by the male attending the nest, but by other males in the neighborhood. So these females are really listening. At least, what else could all that singing be for? The females have to be listening, making some decisions based on what they're hearing. And that's what leads, I think, to this wonderful dawn chorus that we can enjoy.
That's quite an interesting interpretation, for sure. There's also this amazing dynamic, the fact that some birds have very simple songs and calls, and then there are some legendary species that have literally thousands of different calls. Give us some a heads up on that diversity, some of the color that's involved in that fact.
Yeah, oh my. Some birds we think of as having a single song, like a chipping sparrow. Just one song. It's just a series of simple chip. Song sparrow. Down in San Diego, I know there are lots of song sparrows. Mm-hmm. The birds have maybe 10 different songs apiece, and you can listen to a bird. He'll sing one of his forms over and over and over, and if you're attentive, you hear him suddenly switch to another one, and he'll sing that one for a while. Then you work your way up the scale, a western marsh wren, 150 songs, mockingbird, 200, and you get up to some of these thrashers, the brown thrasher that we've studied here in the east, maybe 2,000 different songs that it can sing during a couple of hour period, and it might even be improvising and making a lot of those songs up on the spot. It's able to repeat some, so we know that he has a memory, but he might be making some up on the spot too. And then there's some birds like cedar waxwings or the crows and jays. We think of them, they are songbirds. They belong in this group called songbirds, yet we don't think of them as having a song. But they get by perfectly fine, of course. So, yeah, tremendous variety of singing behaviors among birds, great range of repertoire sizes. That's all part of the great diversity that we can hear out there.
Well, and of course, your book, The Singing Life of Birds, chronicles these different species and analyzes the nature of their repertoire in great detail, and also is embellished by many of your personal stories as you went out and discovered these. And it's a great read. You don't have to read the whole book, but you certainly, if you wish to learn a specific bird, you can go out, identify a bird, and then learn at that point. And let's move now into this aspect, and that is, What are some of the ways in which a person can better learn and appreciate these birds in the field?
Well, I advocate an approach that's quite different from what some others do. You can go to the local Audubon store or any bookstore and find a lot of CDs that help you identify species. So the goal then becomes to identify, 50 or 60 species that are in one's neighborhood. And I would take a different approach. I say, well, that's okay. You're learning to identify species. But I think there's a shortcut. I think there's a much easier way to come to identify species. And that's to identify with one individual at a time. So I advocate in my book to pull up a chair and sit underneath a robin. Or you can listen to the CD, the exercise that I provide. Just listen to one bird and get to know that one bird, and you start to hear things that you never thought possible. And with a robin, why you start to hear the rhythm to the song and the different phrases that he uses and how he puts it all together, and you hear the little pauses here and there. People say there are a lot of birds that sound like robins that they confuse with robins. But once you've listened to a robin in your lawn chair for a while, you'll never be confused again. So identifying with an individual robin, in my opinion, leads you to easily identify all other robins, and clearly those robin sound-alikes, then, why, it's as different as night and day. So I think it starts with just picking one bird and enjoying the variety of things that it does. And before you know it, a lot of the other things that you hear are going to fall into place.
Well, and also, guess what? In that process, life takes on new meaning. You're sitting, you're enjoying life, you're connecting, you're learning. And in particular, what always has such meaning to me, and that is that you're really beginning to interpret the wonder of these creatures, the diversity, the complexity. They're not just simple little animals.
What just makes me so sad, I shouldn't impose my feelings on other people, but what makes me so sad is to read about these accounts of people chasing all over the world to see how many species they can list, or to have a big day and see how many species they can list in one day, and if they see one individual, however fleetingly, it counts, and then they don't need to see another one. And just to go through the world of birds in that fashion just leaves me sad, because, the richness of their lives that is missed in this kind of a race. As I said, this makes me sad.
You know, a fun thing might be to have you really just focus on the robin, because virtually everybody's heard a robin, and help listeners as a beginning see how you might suggest they go about becoming familiar and learning about the robin from the perspective of its calls and its behaviors and society and its place in the world.
Oh, my. This is what I do in that second chapter in the book.
You do indeed.
Let's take a robin, because they're everywhere. You look at a field guide, and I think every state in the Union has robins, maybe except Hawaii. But if you pull up a chair and listen to one individual midday, and you start to just try to identify with what this bird is doing, you hear these phrases playing out, and then you hear that while there's several phrases put together, and then there's a slight pause, and then three or four more phrases, and a slight pause. So you start to hear the rhythm. And then you realize that, well, these little phrases that are put together, successive ones, are almost always different. It sounds like he has an endless variety of them, but then I would say every bird that you listen to has a handle of some kind that you can use to crawl inside his mind. So every once in a while, this bird will sing a particularly unique phrase that you'll say, well, that was unique, and then you don't hear it for a while again. And then it comes back, you hear it again. And so the robin is telling you, oh, it's not an endless stream of these whistled carols or phrases I'm singing, but I've got a limited number, and if you listen carefully, you're going to hear the same one recurring every once in a while. So you listen for that one, then maybe there's another one that you can start to hear. And before you know it, you're crawling inside the mind of this robin. You hear how he's using a limited number of phrases, playing them all together in these sequences, pausing. There's a definite rhythm on top of that. And then you realize that with just a little bit of math, you can figure out how many different phrases he has. All you have to do is count the number of phrases that he sings in a given period of time. And if you have that one little unique phrase that you grab onto every time he sings and count the number of those, why, suppose he sings 100 phrases and 10 of them are this one particular phrase that you've been able to recognize. Well, the math is quite simple. 100 divided by 10 means that he has about 10 different phrases in his repertoire. And initially it sounded like there was just an infinite number. But by that careful listening, now you've crawled inside his mind, you know he has a repertoire size of about 10, and you hear how all this plays out. And this is just the daytime thing, of course. Then there's what he does at dawn that gets a little more complicated.
Mm-hmm. What are some tools that a person might use to help them in this quest?
Well, I guess the first thing I think of is listen to the CD that I've supplied with my book.
Mm-hmm.
There I give a couple of, 1 or 2 minutes of robin song, and I show the sonograms for these, because if we are, we are seeing animals. We, our world is sensed so much through our eyes, and our ears are pretty undeveloped. And so one of the decisions I made fairly early on in this book is that I'm going to use sonograms. And this sounds like a frightening word, and you open my book and it says, people tell me they look at these sonograms. I prefer to call them musical scores for birdsong. But you look at these musical scores, and why, it's a bit frightening. But then you play the songs from the CD as you look at these sonograms, and you see how the sounds play out in both frequency and time. And you realize that, wow, just looking at these songs helps us to hear so much better. So I'm a strong believer in seeing these songs as we hear them. And once you see them as you hear them, why, you'll never hear them in the same way again. And there's some very simple computer programs, very inexpensive. A $25 program from Cornell, for example, called Raven Light, that anybody can load up onto their computer and take any songs that you take off a CD that you buy or songs that you yourself have recorded and play these into the computer. And just seeing them, if we add that extra sense, we add to our hearing the seeing of the song as we hear it, it burns that song into memory like the ears alone could never accomplish.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, and I've had my own aversion to sonograms because I didn't really quite appreciate their value, and you made it absolutely clear to me, particularly as I would put on the CD, and you look at the book and you see the track. Yeah, I had to look a little bit for that track number, but it's below each sonogram, and that gives you the indication of where that is on the CD as you're looking at it in the book. And you follow along as you're hearing these very clear, precise recordings of the birds. And as you say, they take on a depth, they take on a richness. You can almost begin to chew on them. But here's where I really found the value. It's like one time I went out with a friend of mine, and I was he's a poet. And we were on a quest to have people tell us poems, and we were collecting them with a recorder. And it turns out very few people really can give you can quote a poem. Many people can't, do some little nursery rhyme. Most people can maybe do two or three. And I found that really odd. We both did. Now, if I said, could you give me a song, people can literally sing many times 20, 50, 100 or more songs with the words and the melody, the whole thing. So there's something about multiplying these cues that helps us to remember this. And so what I found, that as I looked at the sonogram and listened to these, and then of course there's the name of a bird that's associated with it, I began to say, a pileated woodpecker we have this particular rhythm. It's visual, and I can sense it, and I can associate that visual cue in terms of the song with that particular bird, and suddenly it adds another dimension for me to remember and learn. And the sonograms are very interesting. I highly recommend people take the time to do that, but you don't have to. You make it clear that this isn't something that you necessarily want to do. You have to. You can still use the book, but
Some people look at those sonograms and they get scared. I have a friend here, I have two friends, one who just devoured them and got so excited about them, and another one who said, I can't quite tackle this book. Those sonograms scare me. So first person took the second person under wing, and before we knew it, there were two converts.
Yes.
So sometimes people need a little help.
Well, it's like learning a foreign language. Until you get a certain sense of really how it works,
mm-hmm.
It's all confusing and gibberish. But I made that correlation between the sonogram and the bird and the name of the bird and the call, and it's going to be a lot easier for me to go out, because I've stumbled with that. I've struggled with memorizing bird calls, and that's something I'd love to be able to do. This is a terrific aid.
It's difficult. And Sydney, what I'm hoping to do is not only take people to where they enjoy identifying, but there's a wonderful book, and I think the title is "Seeing is Forgetting the Name of What You're Seeing."
Mm-hmm.
And so, What I want to do is take people beyond identifying to where, what would I say, truly hearing a bird is forgetting the name of what you're hearing. So you go beyond this label to crawling inside the mind of an individual, and you just hear all the stuff that it's doing as it plays out its repertoire and how it's interacting with other birds in the area. And so it's identifying with that I'm striving to take people to rather than just identifying, but it all comes together.
You, yes, you, will today hear a bird call. Or perhaps you can now say, I heard a bird today that had a lot to say. When we return, we find out how to really get started seeing into the life of the birds in your world. So stay put. We're about to enter part 3 of today's special feature, The Singing Life of Birds, on your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.